I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for murders that defy explanation, mystery seeking exploration, and shocking secrets that will leave you breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops. And neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back live with more Gabe Ramirez on The Score.
Gabe Ramirez hanging out with you on 104.3 The Score. ¿Qué lo que hay, mi gente? What is good, my people? We are rolling all the way till 5 o'clock on this one. That is when I'll be handing it off to Dustin Rhodes. Always a pleasant surprise when I see him in studio, because I know my time is almost up when I see him walk in. Nah, but he is the goods, man. I, we all have a respect in this building for, you know, producing and how much effort goes into it. It really is a thankless job. And, you know, it's one of those jobs where, you know, because I've done it. So I know where you are doing more work. Yes, not mentally, because mentally the host has to do a ton of work, but you are doing more work, like work for the show than the host themselves. And so Dustin Rhodes, I know what kind of work he puts in terms of preparation for the show. And so, you know, seeing him walk through the door, you always get buttoned up a little bit because, you know, the best producer at The Score is sitting in front of you. So hand it off to him at 5 o'clock. I think he does a phenomenal job with the pregame show. And then after that, Mully and Haw. I don't know if David Haw's out today. I know he was out yesterday. I saw Brad Biggs sitting in. Do you know if David's out today too?
He is back. Yes, he's back today.
Back today?
David and Ruthie morning.
Oh, little David and Ruthie.
So I think Mully's on vacation next week.
Right.
So now it's like a smooth transition, like one out. Now another one's out.
Okay. So David missed one day and now Mully's out for a while. Okay. So Ruthie will be on Friday. I'll be on Monday, Tuesday with David, and I'm sure that'll all continue over there. But the phone lines are open because what I'm doing overnight with the Night Owls is taking phone calls. And shout out to the Night Owls that have called already. For those of you that don't know, I have dubbed the regulars though, not just callers. But I've dubbed the regulars the Night Owls. And here's how I know if you're a member. If you call in and I say, you know, Mike, hey, Mike, what's up? You a Night Owl? And if you say, yeah, that's how I know you're not really a Night Owl, right? The correct answer is who? Hey, Mike, you a Night Owl? Who? All right, what do you want to talk about, Mike? That's how we do it, okay? So if you call in, that's how we're going to differentiate between the two. So phone lines are open, 312-644-6767. We're talking about a bunch of stuff today. Obviously, you know, slow time of the year, a little mid-Febs, little NBA All-Star break, little NHL Olympic break, little Super Bowl is already over, little spring training hasn't started yet. I mean, damn, no March Madness. We are in the thick of it doing overnight shows, Tyler, over here on this one. But plenty of stuff to talk about, and we have the wheel of topics, because I don't want to just stick to one. And what if you're sleeping when I'm talking about something good? So I want to be able to open it up at all times. So if you're listening right now, if you could pick one place anywhere to build the Bear Stadium, where would you build it? Got some text messages coming in. Somebody said Soldier Field, which I think is funny. I guess you could build it on Soldier Field if you want to. Someone said Evanston because I live there. Fair enough. That seems like fair enough. One said, I would never drive to Iowa. Fair. I don't think any of us would drive to Iowa if it were to be out there. That's the case. So that's one of the questions that's out there. What Olympic sport do you like? Are you a fan of curling? I just want to hear your guilty pleasures. Like, look, curling's on right now. And we were talking from Charles in Mundelein. He said he knew that it was a slow day at the bar because they were playing curling on the... You know what it is? I'll tell you why curling is captivating. Because it is Ketamine. Tyler, you can't stop. You can't even look away right now. You just watched that whole disc go all the way down the thing.
My brain was mesmerized at how fast they were sweeping, but also like how do they keep up with the thing moving, like and not hit the other ones that are already placed on the ice.
I mean, and they can make it go wherever they want. I wonder what's at the bottom of that little scrapey thing. You think, is it like, what material do you think it is?
That beats me, honestly. I couldn't tell you.
I mean, because I'm looking at it, I'm watching them do it right now, and they can get it there with like the extreme precision. I mean, I'm good at shuffleboard. You know, I've played on a couple cruises. I've been to Royal Palm in Wicker Park. I know what that is. All right, here's some curling verbiage for you, Tyler. Stone is what they throw. It's a 42-pound granite rock with a handle on top. It curls as it slows due to rotation and pebbles on the ice. So that's what so it's curling to the thing, but it's 42 pounds? 42 pounds? I would not have guessed that. I would have thought 10.
It does not look that heavy.
15 maybe. 42 is crazy. All right, so the place that, or what they play on, is called the sheet. The house is the target with the center rings in the middle. That's where they're always going. The button is the exact center of the house. So the house is the rings. The button is the middle. The T line is the horizontal line through the center, that blue one that you get there. The pebble are sprayed droplets on the ice that reduce friction. Sweeping changes how the stones rides over the pebbles. So wait, the pebbles are placed? Who gets to determine how the pebbles are placed? Oh, I got to look this up now. I can't stop this. Who determines where the pebbles are placed? Because right? That sounds weird. All right, pebbles. I'm intrigued now. Okay. The pebbles aren't placed in specific spots by strategy. They're created by the ice technician. The ice tech uses a pebble can. This is a deep cut on curling right here. The ice tech uses a pebble can, a watering can style sprayer, to mist hot or warm water droplets evenly over the sheet. The droplets then freeze into tiny bumps, the pebbles, and the goal is uniform coverage across the street, not a pattern for one team. Between games, the crew will scrape the old surface and re-pebble to reset it. At higher levels, they'll also shave the tops of the pebbles to keep it consistent. What? Are you kidding me? I'm over here thinking that they're just throwing it on a piece of ice and they've manipulated the ice and curling to get to that point. That's deep. That's a deep cut.
I've never learned this much about curling in my life.
And I'm actually low-key intrigued right now. I am intrigued. All right, let me see. So standard team is four players. Each throws two stones per shot. Got that. The game is structured like an inning. So most games are 8 to 10 ends is what they're called. They're not called innings. They're called ends. Isn't that funny? The hammer, the advantage of throwing last in the end. Oh, my God. Scoring rules. Got that. In play, out of play, sweeping rules. Sweeping rules. Oh, this is good. There are rules to sweeping in curling. Sweeping does not push the stone. Okay, I could have told you that. It slightly warms or smooths the pebble so the stone travels farther and curls less. So if it hits the pebbles, that's when it starts spinning. Okay. The skip or vice skip will yell commands like hard. Whoa. This is great. Now this is overnight chat right here. This is 2 a.m. talk. Is it curling or something else? Hard. Harder. Whoa. This is great. All right. Here we go. Tyler. These are the different shots in curling. You ready for this?
I didn't know there were shots.
There are different types of shots.
I guess that makes sense. Yeah.
You could have a draw, which is a gentle shot meant to stop in a precise spot. A guard, a draw that stops in front of somebody else. A takeout, as you can imagine what that would be, hit somebody else's. A peel, a takeout that removes a guard and rolls your shooter out too. Huh? See, that's when that's...
So maybe that's like it hits something and then...
And then you I don't know. Freeze a draw that stops directly against another stone. That makes it harder to remove. You could tap or bump. You could raise. You could do a double. One shot that removes two stones or a blank end where no one scores. Bruh. Like, I'm just thinking, like, as a kid that grew up in the city of Chicago, I am trying to think, like, how in the world is anyone from the inner city ever supposed to be, not only be good at curling, but even exposed to it? You know what I'm saying? These guys, the curling is so cool because everyone thinks they can do it. Let's be very clear. That is the only reason that people do that. Let me see. I'm going to look up Winter Olympic Games because I know curling. Do you know how many games there are in Winter Olympics? You look that up for me. Look that up for me.
You just kind of sparked my mind with something else, though. Like,
what's that?
You said what? Curling is something that everyone thinks they can do. How many sports do you think everybody thinks they can do? Like, it's so good in your mind, but then you go out there and you're like, oh, I stink at this. I'll give you one right off the top of my head from personal experience.
I love this.
Golf.
Okay. You thought golf was going to be easy? You thought hitting a little ball 400 yards into a hole was going to be easy?
Yeah. Growing up playing baseball and tennis, it's like, oh, sort of the same way with swinging, with just going down. First time I hit it, I was like, oh, I got this in the bag. And then I kid you not, because we only did 9 holes, I sucked.
Yes.
The rest of the time, it was so frustrating.
There is, I mean, golf is that. You know what I'm saying? Golf is that. It's a frustrating sport. But again, there's ones that you think you can do. So let's see. 2026 Winter Olympics. 8 sports, 16 disciplines. No, man. 8? There's only 8? No. How many different events? That's what it is. Because at the Olympics, let me see. All right, so we got
8 sports and 15 disciplines.
Disciplines. I don't know what that means.
So classifications, basically, I think.
Like speed skating, slow skating? I don't know.
Here, I'll give you the...
There's 116 medal events. That's what I was
looking for. There we go.
116 medal events. If you mean events as in sports, explain sports and disciplines. I mean, I don't even know what that means. This is good. I mean, because I want to know more about the Olympics, but I just don't care to learn more. But I want to learn more. So a sport discipline event. So the sport is skiing. The discipline is alpine skiing. And the events are slalom, giant slalom, super G, and downhill. I love that. Okay, the sport is skating, but there's figure skating, speed skating, short track skating, and the events could be the men's singles, women's singles. Okay. So as you mentioned, there's 8 sports, 16 disciplines. Still don't know what that means.
I think it's classifications within that particular sport.
Right. So the sport is sliding. That's what they're calling a sport, Tyler. A sport is sliding in the Olympics. The disciplines are bobsleigh, skeleton, and luge. And the events, however, are the two-man, the two-woman, the four-man, and the mixed of all of those. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 12 in just the sliding one. That's crazy. I didn't know that. But are 8 sports in the Winter Olympics? There's only 8 sports in the Winter Olympics? 16 disciplines. And then of those 16 disciplines, there's events in each of those to make it 116. I am in deep right now with the Olympics. But here are some of them. Alpine skiing, the biathlon. Love that. Bobsleigh. I thought it was called bobsledding. But bobsleigh, cross-country skiing, curling, figure skating, freestyle skiing, ice hockey, luge, Nordic combined. Dude, I couldn't even tell you what that is. A Nordic combined? Gabe Ramirez here, 104.3 The Score, live and local, overnights, all the way to 5 o'clock. Doing our Olympic bit right now. Nordic combined? I couldn't tell you what that is. Skeleton, ski jumping, snowboard, speed skating. Okay. All right. Nordic combined. What is the Nordic combined? And we'll move on from this in a second. I when I was growing up, I always wanted to watch the Olympics just because it was the people that were the best of the best. And I feel like the Olympics have kind of gone away. I don't know if it's political tension or, you know, there's maybe not enough superstar athletes in these things. But, all right, the Nordic combined, oh my gosh, is a ski jump with a cross-country skiing. Dude. I guess I'm more marveling at like the idea that people are doing this all year long. And I never even heard of these things. You know? How much do you think they're making? The person that wins the Nordic combined, how much do you think they make a year?
Do you have the answer? Or are you guessing?
No, I'm asking you.
I feel like I'm going to be way, way right. So wait. The person who wins the Nordic skiing event?
The Nordic combined Olympic event, the person that comes in first and wins the gold medal, how much money does that person make a year? Because I'm trying to think.
Okay.
And like, if you're an Olympic athlete and that's your jam and you're the number one, you know, Nordic combiner, like, how much are you? Are you making $150,000 a year? Are you making a million?
I kind of wanted to hear. See, I was right in the middle of that. The first thing I thought of in my mind was $500,000.
A little half a mil.
I don't know. That's why it's tough.
You better be making at the very least $250,000 a year.
If you're
a gold medal anything per year, you should be making $250,000. I don't know how you're making it, speaking gigs, whatever it is, but okay, there isn't. Let me see.
I think there's a wide range depending on the person. So I'm going to say just $500,000. If I'm off, I'm off.
Right. So you get if you win a gold medal for Team USA, you get a bonus of $37,000. It's not enough to cover the travel to the thing, just to be very clear.
I was waiting for a couple more zeros at the end of that.
Yeah. You could win some World Cups, some sponsorship. Okay. Okay, that's great. Let's go back to the phone line. Sorry.
I'm anxious to hear what you have to think of this caller.
All right.
This is a good one.
Bill, let's do it. It's Gabe Ramirez here on 104.3 The Score. Live and local all the way till 5 o'clock, taking phone calls. There's topics on the wheel. You got whatever you want. We got Bill. Bill, you a night owl?
Well, I am. I am a night owl. I like in the morning, I listen to Molly and Haw. And then I used to listen to Grabber every day, but, you know, then he died. And then I listened to the guys who came on before you went to Westwood One. And now, you know, now I listen to you guys.
I love it.
I'm not a night owl, but I stay up a lot, but I wouldn't call myself a night owl.
All right, Bill, so what's on your mind at 2:20 in the morning Chicago time?
No, it's 5 o'clock. It's 5 o'clock in the afternoon.
Right, in Tokyo. Right. I get that. So what's on your mind at 5 o'clock in the afternoon in Tokyo?
I want to drop Wrigley Field. I want to top Soldiers Field right on top of Wrigley Field.
Oh, I love this. I see what you're saying. So
then we could eliminate the Chicago. The Cubs would go away.
This is a deep cut. I love this. So we take over Wrigley Field. We take back over Wrigley Field where the Bears used to play originally. And then you just get
No. You said where would you pick up Soldiers Field and put it down? I would pick up the entire Soldiers Field, drop it from like about 100 feet in the air, right on top of Wrigley Field.
I love what you're saying. That's great. Is this how much you hate the Cubs, Bill?
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay. So are you a Sox fan out there in Tokyo, or are you just I'm just a Cubs hater?
Yeah, I'm a Sox fan. I used to like the Cubs, but I just got sick of their being good, but eternally kind of mediocre. But, I mean, not good enough. I mean, you know, they could spend a lot more money on the team, but they don't. I mean, of course, the Dodgers are an anomaly. I mean, if we could eliminate the Dodgers, I'd be perfectly happy.
Right, that'd be a better place to put the stadium on top of Dodger Stadium. Bill, I got to ask.
The question is where in Tokyo, in Chicago?
Yeah, where in Chicago. You're right. That's a good point. All right, I got to ask, though, how did you get out to Tokyo out there? What brought you out there?
I came here during college. I went to Notre Dame, and they had a year abroad program. I came over. I stayed actually 2 years, went back, and then after I graduated, I just came right back to Japan. I've been here for like 35 years.
What do you think is the number one thing that called you back? Like, what were you looking forward to when you got to the States, but was thinking about going back to Tokyo?
Well, you mean what do I like when I go to Chicago?
No, no, no. When you said you spent 2 years in Tokyo, then you came back to the States, right?
Yeah, and I graduated.
Yeah, and then you graduated. So what was the one thing about Tokyo that was drawing you back to it?
Well, there's a lot of pretty girls.
The American.
And you know what? Well, and unless they don't wear Lululemons.
Okay, I don't know what that means. Tell me more about that.
You know what a Lululemon is, right?
Yeah, I know what Lululemon is, but what do you mean they don't wear it? I don't get it.
Well, because the problem is almost no women in the world look good in Lululemons. Most American women think they look good.
Ah, okay, okay. Tokyo out there getting it. All right, passport bro. Different level. I appreciate though. Bill from Tokyo. He's a night owl by nature because he stays up late, but not...
I'm not going to lie. I'm a little disappointed in the reasoning why. I thought it was going to be, hey, let's get the, you know, United Center version of Bears and Cubs. You know, you got the ice and you got the Bulls state, the Bulls court. I mean, I wanted to be surprised. Hold off your thought until Gabe gets to you. I want to be surprised. I'm a little disappointed. No offense to him. I get he's a Sox fan, but I was like, not to eliminate the Cubs.
Well, because you're a Cubs fan.
I am a Cubs
fan. That's why you're salty about that.
A little salty.
As a Sox fan, I could care less about where he, you know, that doesn't, drop it on Wrigley. I love it.
When it came out, I was like, oh, that sounds so cool. Like,
do you think people would complain as much about, you know, because the one complaint about Soldier Field, one of the bigger ones is, you know, getting to the stadium, going home from the stadium. Like, could you imagine if you had Soldier Field in Wrigleyville? Like, it'll be, and you inject 80,000. Wrigleyville's crazy with 35,000 people.
Yeah.
Let alone 70. You would double the amount of people in Wrigleyville. Are you kidding me?
The two biggest attractions in this city, sports-wise.
And then you want to, this is why Soldier Field is a little far away from public transportation. Because could you imagine if the red line after a Bears game at Wrigley, you know what I'm saying, in Wrigleyville? Like, you might be waiting 2 hours to get on the train. Like, you'd be waiting like two blocks away from the train in a line to just go up the stairs to get in the train. You know what I'm saying? Like, you'd be waiting that long.
I don't even want to imagine the amount of room on the train back.
It's giving you a little anxiety.
A little bit of anxiety, yeah.
You know, those renderings came out for the new Chicago Fire Stadium. And yes, they are. There's some pictures that are from the original renderings that came out, but they added the suites and they added a tailgate area. And the Chicago Fire, man, I'm telling you, I tried to tell you guys last year, lock in with them. This year, the season starts February 21st. So we are, oh my God, 8 days away, which is insane. February 28th is the home opener. For those of you that don't know, I'm the in-game host for the Chicago Fire. So if when you go to a game, you're going to catch me on the MIC, on the Jumbotron, just curating your night. I'm also their host for the TV show Inside the Fire. Oh, what did you say? Isn't that the show that won an Emmy? Yeah, it is, actually. I am the host of the Emmy Award-winning Inside the Fire on Marquee Sports Network. So I'm actually next Wednesday is our first episode of the new season. So next Tuesday is our annual luncheon for the Chicago Fire, raising a lot of money for the Chicago Fire Foundation. They do a great job, Jessica Yavitz and the entire crew with the Chicago Fire. So I'll be doing that. Then I'll be filming the episode that afternoon. And then the first episode will air on Wednesday, so that'll be the 18th. So Wednesday the 18th, first episode of the season. And then first game of the season, the 21st. And then, of course, the 28th is the home opener. You got to check them out. Chicago Fire, they've got some new signings. They're going to be good. I can't believe the season's here already. It went by fast. And I'll tell you this, Tyler. Being on TV, like being on radio is cool because, like right now, I'm wearing a hoodie and like jogger pants with paint on it. Like, I don't even care, right? And so all my holiday weight is still on me. Like, I haven't lost my holiday weight. And so, you know, usually you get to like the spring or the summer and you get a chance to like, you know, lose all this stuff. But then when you're on TV and the seasons start, you're like, damn, I'm fat. Like right now I'm like, I don't want to do this TV show. Like, you know, and that's that on the Chicago lead on CHSN, I'm wearing my big suits right now. My big suits. It's just what it is. That's what it is. We're all there. All right. Shout out Bill from Tokyo. Shout out Herschel from Lincoln Park. Shout out everybody that's been calling in. Phone lines are open. We want to hear from you. Continue to hear from you. It's Gabe Ramirez, 104.3 The Score. Phone lines are open, 312-644-6767. On the other side, we are going to talk a little bit about expectations for your Sox and your Cubs. Two different teams headed in two different directions. One, vying for their division and potentially a shot at the World Series, and the other kind of trying to figure out what the team's going to look like this year in a division that's headed by the Detroit Tigers. All right, so if you got any Cubs or Sox thoughts, definitely going to be taking those. And then still talking about the Bears, still talking about the stadiums, still talking about Olympic sports, but the phone lines are open for anything because the Night Owls, this belongs to you. 312-644-6767. It's Gabe Ramirez, live and local right here on 104.3 The Score.
Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
I never heard this in my life, Tyler. Well, I love it. It's Gabe Ramirez right here on 104.3 The Score, and we're talking some baseball. Phone lines are open, 312-644-6767, and we're talking Cubs. We're talking White Sox, because there's a lot of stuff going on, man. I just feel like we've had some bad baseball seasons over the last 5 or 6 years here in Chicago. And I think we're on the upswing with the Cubs, obviously. And I think the same thing could be said for the Chicago White Sox. And so my question for you right now, phone lines are open. I genuinely am curious what your expectations are for your Cubs and my White Sox. Because if I'm a Cubs fan, is it winning the World Series? Are those your expectations for this team? Is that the expectation for this team? You expect them, the expectations are for them to win the World Series? Or to get to the NLCS against the Dodgers? Is that it? Or is it just, you know, hey man, if they win the division again and get to the dance, I'll be happy with that. Because going to the playoffs can change expectations. So I'm curious what that is for you. And then if you're a White Sox fan, first of all, God bless your soul. You're just like me. It's painful. But they've made some really good moves. I had the opportunity to talk to Chris Getz. That sounds weird saying that. Sounds weird saying that. So I chatted with Chris Getz, who, by the way, is just a very, very good guy. Like, you aren't sure. Like, being in media, right? Obviously, you have a ton of jobs and you run across a bunch of people, and you're just not sure how people are going to be. Are they going to be nice? Are they going to be standoffish? Are they going to listen? Right? Because that's a big issue. People just don't listen. Chris Getz was so nice. So, and I understand, listen, I get it, right? We're on the flagship station, CHSN. We're doing the flagship show, Chicago Lead, and he's a guest on the show, so he's going to play nice. But I asked him some serious questions. I was like, hey, you saved $20 million from Luis Robert Jr. Did you feel like, you know, the priority was bullpen help? Are you still going to make more moves? Bunch of things like that. And he was just very open to everything. I think he understands the margins in which he has to operate in. And, you know, they've made some really good moves. Muni Murakami and we'll hear from Will Venable in just a second, who talks about him. Muni is going to be a very good player. This is someone who, you know, hit a bunch of home runs. Then all of a sudden, people felt like his, you know, strikeout swing and miss rate was a little too high. And free agency, people weren't paying a ton of money. And the White Sox just happened to be the beneficiary. And some cool stories have come out of Muni Murakami being a guy for the White Sox. One, you know, Miguel Vargas is on this team and used to play for the Los Angeles Dodgers. What I heard is that Yamamoto called up Miguel Vargas and was like, hey, can you take care of Muni for me? Like, think about that. Like, talk about changing the narrative of a team, right? Somewhere that nobody wanted to go or, you know, perceived that way. And then you have one of the better pitchers in baseball, Yamamoto, calling up one of their younger stars in Miguel Vargas and saying, hey, can you take care of this other guy for me? Love hearing things like that. So you get Murakami, right? You bring in Sir Anthony Dominguez to be essentially your closer. You re-sign Eric Fetty on a prove-it deal, right? And let's not forget, you were able to get prospects from him because he pitched well for you. So you pay $1.5 million basically for prospects because you're going to end up trading Eric Fetty anyway. So there's things there. Davis Martin's back. Shane Smith's back. You know, Drew Thorpe is going to be healthy. You got Noah Schultz, Hagen Smith, younger guys that could potentially come up. So there's you know, there's movement out there. But again, what are your expectations for both the Cubs and the Sox? All my baseball fans that are out there, now is the time. All my third shifters, my night owls, this is the time to call in. All right, 312-644-6767. Let's go out to the phones. Let's go to Philip from the West Side. Philip, you a night owl?
Who?
That's what I'm talking about, Philip. All right, talk to me about these White Sox, baby.
Man, when I saw they got Murakami, I was super excited. And it was weird because, you know, when everyone was talking about him, they were talking about the contract he was going to get and, like, what team was going to bid on him. Was he going to get a whole lot of money? And then people saw the White Sox snagged him, and everyone was so surprised about it. And I was excited. I'm like,
I was surprised really too, Philip. Like,
yeah, it seems like a low-risk deal. It seems like a high-reward, low-risk deal.
Listen, Muni Murakami is the epitome of a low-risk, high-reward move. Didn't cost you a lot of money. It's only a two-year deal. So even if he does perform, like if he doesn't perform well, you only have to pay him for 2 years, right? It was an experiment to try to get some power to back up the departure of Luis Robert Jr. If he plays well, right, and he wants to get super paid in Major League Baseball, you have the ability to trade him in the second year of his contract because he's going to be a bopper that somebody that people are going to want, right? And you're going to be able to flip him, which is ultimately that. I think you get lucky. There was another connection. I don't know if you heard this, Philip, where Shingo Takatsu. Does that name ring a bell to you by any chance?
No, it doesn't.
All right, so Shingo Takatsu used to be a pitcher for the White Sox back in the day, and he's actually one of the guys representing Muni Murakami. So he, again, you talk about, you know, this synergy and how do you get these guys here. Shingo Takatsu's like, yeah, bro, this is a great place to play. You know, Chicago will love you. And sure enough, you know this too, Philip. If this man comes out in April and hits 6 home runs, Chicago's going to be going crazy. Right, exactly. Chicago's going to be going crazy. It's going to be Muni mania everywhere. You know what I'm saying? It's going to be insane. What do you think about – here's a question for you because obviously I'm assuming you're the White Sox fan. When you look at this team, right, who had success at the tail end of last year, I believe there were 9 games over 400 in the second half of the season. When you look at them, do you feel like – do you think there's going to be a regression? Is that the cynic in you that thinks there's a regression, or do you think that this team is going to be better than people are giving it credit for?
I definitely think the team is talented because when we came back from All-Star break, you know, the White Sox were just they're putting in work after All-Star break. I would hope they don't have a sluggish start to the season, but at the end of the day, baseball is 160 games.
Yes,
there was points during the year where like the Dodgers were looking grim. And they won the World Series.
Great point.
You know?
Great point. People were questioning whether they'd be able to, and everybody's just like, half people are like, oh, Dodgers are cooked. And then the other half of people are like, just wait till the
playoffs. Hey, I'm sorry, sir. I gotta go. I'm sorry.
No problem. Damn. He's getting pulled over or something like that? That was crazy. No problem, Philip. Hey, I hope you're okay, though. I hope you're all right. It sounded kind of serious right there. But I think you're absolutely right. When you're talking about, you know, Major League Baseball, 162 games over the course of a season, you're going to run into those situations. The White Sox over under is sitting at 66.5 right now. I'm telling you right now, hammer the over. They will win over 66 games.
I think they'll get 70 this year. What?
I was talking to David Hall about this, and I was like, David, I was like, what's like a realistic, you know, year over year improvement? Like, can the White Sox get to like 77 games? And he's like, the White Sox? David's the ultimate Cubs fan. The White Sox? I'm like, yeah, 77 is not a lot. He's like, that means they'd be hovering about 500. I'm like, yeah, they should be like about a 500 team. What did they win last year? Do you remember?
60.
They won 60 last year?
60, yeah. He said on the dot.
He said a 10-game improvement would be like crazy for any team, he said. For any team. A 10-game improvement is crazy. But damn, is it? When you're at the bottom, when you only win 60 games, when you've lost 100, 10-game, no, there should be some sort of regression to the mean. I mean, that's crazy. I would bet it. 66 and a half. Lock it in for me. Okay, you're not there with me. All right.
No.
You're a Cubs fan. No, I get it.
Different situation, though. But remember a couple of years ago, the Royals, they won about 60 games, and I think it was the 2024 season. They made the freaking playoffs.
Yeah.
85. I could see it happening. I just think 70. I don't be upset if they get 70 wins. I think that'd be a very successful season for the White Sox.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to get it all.
I hear you. I think it'll hit the over. So I think that's the good thing about it. It's Gabe Ramirez here. 104.3 The Score. Phone lines are open, as you heard, as Tyler was talking. 312-644-6767. We're talking about expectations of both the Cubs and the White Sox. For me, 70 wins should be the floor for the White Sox, because this team is good. They have talent. And then, you know, you're going to be bringing up some guys in the infield. Like I mentioned, you know, Mooney playing. We're going to get some audio from him in a second. Actually, let's jump on that real quick, Tyler. Here is assistant GM of the White Sox, Jeff Barfield, talking about Mooney Murakami and whether or not he feels as though he's a special player.
He's really impressive. I mean, I think the first thing that sticks out is the personality. He's already quickly adjusted to the clubhouse. He's laughing, joking, very outgoing guy. His English is actually like really solid too. So I'm really excited to have him. And then just on the field, like, he's special. Got to watch him take BP on the field for the first time, and he lost a lot of balls in BP today. And, you know, we're excited to get to know him better and watch him play, but I think he's going to be pretty special.
Yeah, I think you also need, you know, clubhouse guys that are good for the team. You know, when losses are piling up, or, you know, when you get swept in a series, you need someone that could lighten things up. Mooney seems like he could be that guy, you know, just like a clubhouse goof. Will Venable also talked about Murakami and what he sees from him on the field.
Defensively, his really dedication to, you know, continue to get better. He was part of the mass ground ball. We call it the ground ball rave today. And he was over at first base, and it was an extensive practice for everybody. And then, you know, he ended up taking some more on his own at third base, which I thought was awesome. And it's not just the volume of work; it's really the quality of the work, the way he moves his feet, the way he's throwing. It really looks good.
Great points right there, because, you know, I love that he pointed out that it's not the volume of work, it's the quality of work. What great insight from a coach. Because you could be sitting there taking 200 ground balls from third base, but if your footwork's not right, your technique's not right, and you don't have a mimicable approach to the ball, I think that's great, great, great. And I love Will Venable. He does a great job with the Chicago White Sox. He has that perfect balance between, you know, hard-nosed coaching and relatability with the players, because, of course, he used to be one. So I just think he's going to continue to piggyback off the success he had last year, and I think the White Sox will be doing good. But we're taking your phone calls, what you guys think about the expectations, and not just the White Sox, but the Cubs as well. Phone lines are open, 312-644-6767. Let's go out to the phone lines. We got George out in Elgin. George, it's 2:48 in the morning. Are you a night owl?
A little bit. I just got off of work. How you doing, buddy?
Doing good, man. All right, so you're excited for the Sox season?
I'm excited for both seasons, man. Like, it's kind of funny. So I'm a Cubs fan. My wife's a Sox fan, but I love both teams. It's Chicago at the end of the day is kind of how I feel it. And I love everything the Sox have done, because they've been so much fun to watch at least the last end of the last season. And with getting Murakami, I think they're doing a really good job. And I think they're going to do a lot better than people are projecting. And I think it's going to be really fun. And I love seeing two teams in Chicago that are really good, because baseball is my favorite sport. So I just have so much fun with it. I love it.
Of course. Listen, I love baseball. There's nothing like baseball in Chicago. We get spoiled to a degree that we don't even understand, because we have two teams playing here that you can go watch baseball from, you know, either division. And I do think you're
100%.
Yeah, and that's the best part about it. I remember one year, George, it was the year after Chris Bryant won the MVP, and I'm a Sox fan too. But, you know, working here at Odyssey, we used to get tickets to the Cubs games all the time. Obviously, they're on our station. And so I would always go to the Cubs games, and people would be like, "But why do you keep going to Cubs fan games? You're a Sox fan." And I'm like, and I'd be like, "Well, because I like baseball, and the most valuable player is here in Chicago in all of baseball, 100%. And I get to just watch the most valuable player." So it's like you get luxuries like that from this team. But I do like the moves that they're making. George, you're bringing up, obviously, this White Sox team, adding Mooney Murakami. You know, they still got Chase Myerdorf, who's a gamer. Miguel Vargas, I love. Coastal Montgomery was playing
so
great. I mean, you got young guys in the outfield that, you know, they could be coming up. The catching situation is shored up with Kyle Teal, Edgar Cara, and Corey Lee. I mean, the only thing you're really worried about really is the rotation, right? Like, who's going to be filling in those roles? Who's going to who are the five starters going to be? But I think they're going to be a team that surprises people, like gamers, you know, scrappy team that wins 3-2, 2-3, 5-4, like those kinds of squads.
Yeah, no, 100%. But that also, like, kind of worries me about the Cubs, too, is, like, who are we going to settle on our rotation and all that? I think it's going to be a really fun year and to see how everyone's going to progress and who's going to fall into what role they're going to fall into. I think it's just going to be a really fun baseball season, and I'm beyond excited that we're finally here. Like, I love football. I love everything. The distraction with the Olympics has been great, but, like, it's baseball season, baby.
That's right.
Let's go.
Give me some cold beers and give me some, buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jacks, because we're right around the corner for that. George, appreciate the phone call. And I appreciate the excitement for the season for both teams. There is something about baseball in Chicago specifically, not just because there's two teams, but also because it's synonymous with spring and the changing of the temperature. You know, even the opening day could be pretty cold here in Chicago. It's just cool to know that, you know, if you know the Cubs are on the score.
Why does it feel like nobody really gives us the inside scoop? Join us on The Powers That Be, the podcast where insiders from Puck break down who has influence, how they use it, and what it actually means for you. New episodes every weekday. Listen to The Powers That Be wherever you get your podcasts.
You know it's nice outside. You think about summertime shy. You think about those kinds of things. So it's going to be interesting. I want to play some more from Will Venable about Mooney Murakami. You know, he talked about how they had him at first base, and then he was taking practice reps on his own at third. And, you know, Miguel Vargas was kind of, you know, all over the place last year too, right? Playing some first, playing some third. So I'm sure they were looking for some more definitive position playing from either of these guys. So here's Will Venable talking about how much Murakami will play third base.
I think we're going to continue to work through that. He's certainly somebody that I think the easiest path as far as, you know, slotting everybody else in around him is to have him at first. So that will be the plan, that most of his time will be spent at first. But we know he's played third in the past, and that's something that we want to be able to tap into and expose him to as well.
I think the fact of the matter is that White Sox players, if you're in the infield, you should expect to get moved around. You saw Chase Myerdorf at one point playing short. He played third a little bit. Vargas, third, first. Then you got Lenin Sosa, who could play. He played first, played third, played second. So there's a lot of guys that can play multiple positions. But with Mooney there, you know, I didn't necessarily like Miguel Vargas at first base. So having him go back to third, which is his natural position. Here's a little known fact. Miguel Vargas, I had the opportunity. Damn, I love the credibility that I have when I say things like this. First, I said I had a chance to talk to Chris Getz, which is just a baby flex. And so I interviewed Miguel Vargas en español. Yo y el cubano hablamos. We had the chance to talk. And his dad is a famous baseball player in Cuba who played third base, Hector Lázaro. And he actually won 2 gold medals for Cuba in the Olympics. And so Miguel Vargas naturally is a third baseman. So even though he was playing first, you know, he couldn't get that tick, obviously, with the Los Angeles Dodgers. But he's ready to be the third everyday third baseman for the Chicago White Sox. But you're going to have to play, you know, again, multiple positions because guys are going to go out. You need days off. And especially on a team like this, if you want as many as at-bats as you can, you got to be able to play some different positions as well. On the other side of the ball, pitching for the Chicago White Sox, as mentioned, you know, when you're looking at the depth chart, and, you know, I was talking to David Hall about this, about, you know, what that rotation is going to look like. Shane Smith should be your opening day starter. Then Davis Martin might be the number 2. Sean Burke, Anthony Kaye, Sean Newcomb. That could be your 5, but you still got Eric Fetty, you know, Drew Thorpe working on some stuff. And then there's some young guys, right, that are going to be starting off in AAA. Of course, I'm talking about Noah Schultz and Hagen Smith, and Will Venable, head coach of the Chicago White Sox, talked about them starting in AAA as opposed to the 40-man roster.
We told them that over the last couple of days, just very directly. You know, we want them to focus on, you know, creating good habits in their weight room routines, in their training room routines, their throwing programs, knowing that, you know, that's the really the building blocks that's going to carry them to have a great season, and also transparent that we expect them to be in Chicago helping us.
Hey, that's the cut that they need to be playing everywhere. If you are a Sox fan and you want to get excited about this team, knowing that 2 potential top-of-the-line rotation starters, very least middle of the rotation, could be with your team at some point this year. That right there is exciting. All right, we are going to continue the show again. Gabe Ramirez hanging out with you, 104.3 The Score. Going to be rolling with you till 5 o'clock. That's when we're handing it off to Dustin Rhodes. He's going to hang out with you for the pregame show that leads you into David and Ruthie today. Right? David and Ruthie? So they will be on and lead you into them. So, again, we got more of your calls on the other side. The wheel is out. My night owls are in full effect. We are talking Cubs and Sox expectations. I am genuinely curious what those are for you. What are your expectations of the Cubs and Sox? We're still talking Bears. Of course, stadium news, offense, court, all that stuff. Just anything Bears. What the draft is up. 25th pick in the draft. We're doing all that. And then, of course, if you so dare and want to talk about the Bulls, you must be prepared to put a dollar in the bucket. All right, we're taking your calls on the other side. We are open 312-644-6767. It's Gabe Ramirez, live and local right here on Chicago Sports Radio, 104.3 The Score.
Sometimes historic events suck. But what shouldn't suck is learning about history. I do that through storytelling. History That Doesn't Suck is a chart-topping history-telling podcast, chronicling the epic story of America, decade by decade, from the 18th century to the 20th. Original music and immersive sound design accompany us on our storytelling journey. Listen to and follow History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.